Hello. I'm going to remember you're all friends and I'm not going to freak out, okay? Okay, well, tonight we're going to talk about jealousy and envy. So when you hear the word jealousy, what comes to mind? Do you think of the green-eyed monster? How about an old rival for a boyfriend? A sibling you thought was favored? What about envy? Do you envy your neighbor's car? Or your friends' vacations, all the fabulous vacations they take? Are you a working mom who envies her non-working friend? Or are you a stay-at-home mom who envies her working friend and all the freedom it seems to bring her? Before I go on, I need to make it clear that there are times when jealousy is righteous. Proverbs 6:34 says, "For jealousy arouses a husband's fury, and he will show no mercy when he takes revenge." 2 Corinthians 11:2a says, "I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy." Exodus 25, "You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." God is speaking of idols there. Psalm 78:58 says, "They angered him with their high places. They aroused his jealousy with their idols." So there is righteous jealousy, just like there is righteous anger. These are things, emotions God has given us, and we're the ones that mess them up. Okay? So tonight we're going to talk about when we mess them up. First of all, we're going to look in the dictionary. And according to Webster's dictionary, and this is going to be your first fill-in, jealousy, the quality of being jealous, earnest concern or solicitude, painful apprehension of rivalship in cases directly affecting one's happiness. Envy is malice, ill will, spite, we're coming up on your second fill-in, chagrin, mortification, discontent, or uneasiness at the sight of another's excellence or good fortune, accompanied with some degree of hatred and a desire to possess equal advantages, malicious grudging. So jealousy affects your happiness, and envy has a degree of hatred. Those are pretty strong things. These are emotions that are brought on by a desire to have something that someone else has. If you would, we're going to be in our Bibles a lot tonight. I'll warn you, so if you need your glasses, you might might grab them. First, we're going to turn to Philippians 2, 1 through 4. So I'll give you a minute to get there. And we're going to read what Paul says, how Paul says we are to be with each other. Okay, so Philippians 2, 1 to 4. Here Paul writes, "If you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others." Jealousy and envy have been around since the beginning. Many times in the Bible, it's referred to in sibling rivalry, such as Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau, and of course, Joseph. First of all, with Joseph, I cannot imagine favoring a child so much. I mean, Jacob wrestled with God. He had many, many blessings, and yet he still favored his one son, obviously and above all others. But this gives me hope because he is a faith hero and he messed up. And so it's okay when I mess up. God is still there. Let's look at Genesis 37, where we are told in detail about Joseph and his relationship with his brothers. We're going to start at verse 1. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. That would make him real popular with them right away, right? Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Wow. Because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made a richly ornamented robe before him. Strike two. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brother said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And again, they hated him all the more because of his dreams and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream. And this time the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me whether they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him in the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. So our next fill-in, Joseph's brothers were both envious and jealous of Joseph, so much so that they actually wanted to kill him. Wow, can you imagine being so jealous and so envious of someone that would be in your heart? Next, we're going to look at King Saul and David. The Israelites, as you know, they wanted to be just like everybody else. They wanted a king. And they asked God over and over for a king. In 1 Samuel 9, we read about a Benjamite, a man of standing whose name was Kish, and he had a son named Saul. In chapter 10, we read that Samuel anointed Saul's head and said, "Has not the Lord anointed you leader over his inheritance?" So Saul became king of Israel, chosen by God to lead his people. And Saul in the beginning was a good king. He was a warrior, and he led the people into many battles. But after a time, Saul got a little too big for his britches, and he decided he could do things on his own, that he didn't always need to do it God's way, and God didn't really mean it when he said, kill everybody and everything. So after a while, 1 Samuel 15, Saul said to Samuel, "I have sinned. I violated the Lord's command and your instructions. I was afraid of the people, and so I gave in to them." Anybody hear excuses? "Now I beg you, forgive my sin and come back with me, so that I may worship the Lord." But Samuel said to him, "I will not go back with you. You have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you as king over Israel." As Samuel turned to leave, Saul caught hold of the hem of his robe and it tore. Samuel said to him, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to one of your neighbors, to one better than you. He who is the glory of Israel does not lie or change his mind, for he is not a man that he should change his mind." So God took Saul's kingdom away. Then in 1 Samuel 16, God leads Samuel to David, the shepherd boy. In verse 13 of chapter 15, Samuel anoints David as the next king of Israel. Verse 14 tells us that then the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. Remember back before Jesus, the Spirit came and went. It didn't always stay. Now, once we've received Christ, he stays with us. But back then, he came and went. So when this happened, Saul would at times get enraged, and they brought David in, who played his harp, to calm Saul down. And during this time, David became great friends with Saul's son, Jonathan. They became best friends. And as time went on, the people started to look at David and admire David, and Saul became jealous of David. In the New Testament now, there are other examples of jealousy. The greatest example, of course, is Jesus. When Jesus came, the first person to be jealous of him was King Herod, who heard from the Magi that a king was to be born. And he was so enraged and so jealous that he ordered all the boys, two and under, to be slaughtered. Later, it was the religious leaders, the very men who should have known who Jesus was. You would think by studying the scriptures they would recognize him, but they were so jealous of the people flocking to him, they tried over and over again to trick him into messing up so that they could condemn him. We all know how this turned out for Jesus. Eventually, he was accused, he went to the cross, he died for us, which I don't want anyone to misunderstand. It was not man's doing. He willingly did that for us. 3 days later, he rose again, and now he sits at the right hand of God. So they kind of lost that one. Our next fill-in is with Ecclesiastes 4:4. It says, "And I saw that all labor and all achievement spring from man's envy of his neighbor. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." The next fill-in is Proverbs 14:30. "A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones." Proverbs 27:4, "Anger is cruel and fury overwhelming, but who can stand before jealousy?" So someone pointed out to me, jealousy is actually worse than anger. 1 Corinthians 3:3, "You are still worldly, for since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere men?" Next fill-in, James 3:16, "For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder, and every evil practice. So let's see, we've got disorder, we're rotting our bones, and hatred. Doesn't really sound great. But how do we combat it? Okay, let's go back to Joseph, whose brothers were so jealous that they wanted to kill him, and then decided, we can make a buck, so why waste it? First, Joseph became a slave. Then he was imprisoned, and finally he was brought to Pharaoh, where he became the second highest ruler in Egypt. When Joseph's brother came to Egypt to buy food because there was famine in all the land, Joseph could have ordered them immediately arrested, imprisoned. He could have had them killed, and nobody would have taken a second glance. Instead, he inquired about his father and his younger brother. When they purchased the grain, he had the money put back in their sacks and sent them on his way. When they came back the second time, he had them come to his home, where they were fed a great feast and given gifts. Let's look at Genesis chapter 45, where we hear Joseph's response to years of jealousy and envy. It says, "Then Joseph could no longer control himself before his attendants, and he cried out, 'Have everyone leave my presence.' So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still living?' But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come close to me.' When they had done so, he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says. God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Don't delay. You shall live in the region of Goshen and be near me, you, your children and grandchildren, your flocks and herds, and all you have. I will provide for you there, because 5 years of famine are still to come. Otherwise, you and your household and all who belong to you will become destitute. You can see for yourselves, and so can my brother Benjamin, that it is really I who am speaking to you. Tell my father about all the honor accorded me in Egypt and about everything you have seen, and bring my father down here quickly.' Then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept, and Benjamin embraced him, weeping." That was his response to years under his brother's jealousy and envy. He welcomed them with open arms and he wept. We're going to go back to David. 1 Samuel 18 says, "Whatever Saul sent him to do, David did it so successfully that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the people and Saul's officers as well. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with tambourines and lutes. As they danced, they sang, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands.' Saul was very angry. This refrain galled him. 'They have credited David with tens of thousands,' he thought, 'but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?' And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David." Once King Saul realized how the people were reacting to David, he became so jealous that he decided to kill David. But David continued to honor Saul. When Saul's daughter Michal was offered to him in marriage, his response was, Who am I? And what is my family or my father's clan in Israel that I should become the king's son-in-law? Many times David fled from Saul. He was protected at different times by his wife Michal, the prophet Samuel, Saul's son Jonathan, the priest Ahimelech, and many others. Let's go back to 1 Samuel 24. And we're going to read how David responded to the envy and jealousy. After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, David is in the desert of En-Gedi. So Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of wild goats. 3,000. He was serious. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there. And when Saul went in to relieve himself, David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, "This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, 'I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Afterward, David was conscience-stricken for having cut off the corner of his robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lift my hand against him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. Then David went out of the cave and called to Saul, "My lord, the king!" When Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. He said to Saul, "Why do you listen when men say, 'David is bent on harming you'? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, 'I will not lift my hand against my master, because he is the Lord's anointed.' See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. I cut off the corner of your robe, but did not kill you. Now understand and recognize that I am not guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. As the old saying goes, from evildoers come evil deeds, so my hand will not touch you. Against whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom are you pursuing? A dead dog? A flea? May the Lord be our judge and decide between us. May he consider my cause and uphold it. May he vindicate me by delivering me from your hand." When David finished saying this, Saul asked, "Is that your voice, David, my son?" And he wept aloud. "You are more righteous than I," he said. "You have treated me well, but I have treated you badly. You have just now told me of the good you did to me. The Lord delivered me into your hands, but you did not kill me." So David would not harm Saul. And your last fill-in, he continued to honor Saul. He gave grace. Grace was given, of course, by Jesus to all of us. And he's told us so many, many times in his word. But Matthew 7:12 says, "So in everything do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets." So what is the solution to jealous and envy? Love. God's love and God's grace. Jealousy and envy lead to painful apprehension of rivalship and some degree of hatred. But through God's love and grace, we can offer love and hope to a dying world. Galatians 2:20 says, "I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me." Praise God. There is nothing, if this is a struggle you have, you can completely handle it through God. Matthew 7, 7 through 8 says, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds. And to him who knocks, the door will be open." With God's help, if this is your struggle, you can overcome it. I'd like to end with a short story. It's a true story. There were two neighbors, two families that lived next door to each other. One was a Christian family. One was a non-Christian family. The Christian family had wonderful children, a great marriage, very active in their church and in their community. But things were always tight. They never seemed to be able to have enough to do that dream vacation. Their cars were old, and they struggled at times just to make ends meet. The neighbors, however, the non-Christians, had brand new cars, they had a nice boat, a brand new camper parked out front. This caused the Christian wife to envy the non-Christian wife. She could never figure out why God was blessing that family so much when they did nothing for him. One day, 15 years into their being neighbors, both ladies were outside working in their gardens. And they struck up a conversation. Their relationship was very surfacey. But they were talking about what they were planning and what they hoped to raise. And the non-Christian lady stood up at the fence between the yards and she said, "You know, I've always admired you. You have such a great marriage and you have such wonderful children. What is your secret?" In that moment, the Christian lady realized, 15 years and I have never shared the Lord. I have been so jealous and so envious of her possessions. She invited her over for some iced tea. They sat on the porch and she shared the Lord. It wasn't then, but several months later, that lady did come to Christ, and soon after her family did also. But she almost missed it over possessions. Remember, things we envy or are jealous of each other, of people we know, they're just things. We can't take them with us. We all have Jesus, and he's enough.